Marketing is not just to spend money on an advertisement. Marketing is to have results. And the results, if you present to your lay leadership, this is what we feel will happen. And then I think you can bring them around to say, wait a minute, we have to do this because, you know, we're getting older and we're not going to be on the board forever. And some of us are losing our jobs and some of us have to cut back a little bit. I'm sure there are people out there who can give more.
It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC, broadcasting throughout the New York, New Jersey area and worldwide at MYBRadio.com, MYBRadio.com, and of course on the 77 WABC app. Yes, it's week in and week out that we reference the Nielsen ratings because it's a big deal. You know, Nielsen is the global measurement and data analytics company, and they have this show in the top 10 in New York AM radio once again this month. Thank you so much for entrusting us to deliver great, important business content for you week in and week out. This show, Mind Your Business on the legendary 77 WABC, is all about you and tips to get you in to get you ahead in today's business world. We cover such a wide range of professions and categories: sales, social media, nonprofits, the organizations. We're going to get to that tonight. Emerging technologies, leadership, strategic planning, entrepreneurship, financial planning, marketing and advertising, and so much more. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where you'll gain solid advice to get you ahead in the business world, and specifically tonight in the organizational space. I appreciate all the feedback that I get regularly. Thank you so much. The phone calls, the emails, the WhatsApps, and letters. Thank you so much. Also, a special thank you to the great folks here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, ELMG, who play such an important support role behind the scenes. Cirilli, Michal, Bracha, Miriam, Malki, thank you. And to the great folks at 77 WABC who make it all happen. James, Glenn, Matt, Chris, thank you. Also, a special shout out, I mentioned, to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on. We have a robust YouTube channel. Tonight's show will be up on YouTube. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Player.fm, many other channels that people access to consume their content these days. You can access all our past shows, the interview I had with Joseph Abu, the noted fashion design icon, Beth Comstock, former vice chair at CMO and GE, John Sculley, the former CEO of Apple and Pepsi, and so many, Dr. Adrienne Boise, the chief experience officer at the Cleveland Clinic, and so many other great guests. Each and every episode is available by going to MYBRadio.com, MYBRadio.com. Without further ado, going to tonight's very special guest, a friend, a noted fundraising consultant, Rabbi Richard Chaim Bieler. He is the former senior fundraiser for Yeshiva University, YU, and at Ohel Children's Home and Family Services. Today, Rabbi Bieler is a noted fundraising consultant, and therefore, and tonight's show, and of course, for those that just celebrated Rosh Hashanah, we are now in a brand new year, 5781, and we thought of no better way to kick off the new year by providing advice and guidance for the backbone of so many, and this is not just specifically for those of the Jewish faith, but of all faiths. At the end of the day, our organizations are on the front lines, day in and day out, doing what needs to get done for the less fortunate, and not only for the less fortunate, for all of us. We all benefit from organizations that are out there. And we said to ourselves, what better way could we kick off the year on the right foot by other than having a noted fundraising consultant who can provide advice, perspective for our great organizations out there on how they can improve their fundraising. In addition, there's another point that for many, right, the fiscal year goes January to December. So, you know, and Rabbi Bieler, I'm going to open even with that question. First of all, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm going to ask the following question just to open it up. Are there any months? I mean, now, again, we just had Rosh Hashanah. We're kicking off the new Jewish year. It's September. Are there any months in particular where donors are more likely to make their gifts?
Well, statistics show, and Giving for Good has a statistic that says that 31% of all charitable gifts are made in December alone. And there's a remarkable statistic for the last three business days of the calendar year as well. So as compelling as your cause is, and as the relationships that are developed between you and your board and your donors, the close, which is the key, the signing of the agreement, the writing of the check, the transferring from the foundation, that takes place, almost one third of all contributions are made in December. Now, in the fundraising world, September means you're already in December, because you're not going to close a significant gift in December unless you start talking, certainly in September, if you haven't started talking about it in July and August.
Well, that brings to the all-important question. Perhaps you could scope out the road to a gift. You just touched on it, and is it fair to say that even September to December is quite tight in and of itself, that the road to a gift really starts to get paid even way before 3 months out?
It really depends the relationship you have and which gift is it. Is it the first gift to the organization? Then the road is longer. Is it a repeat gift? Then the road should be shorter, providing that the organization has been properly in touch with the donor. So if it is a repeat gift, and I find one of the ironies is there's more excitement in landing a big new donor, but it's so much easier to close a second and a third gift. And sometimes people want to feel the excitement in the office. Oh, I have an idea, and this person knows that one, and they're connected, and maybe we'll go that way. When they're missing out on opportunities, especially this year, where it's going to be so hard, if not almost impossible, to start new relationships, that the idea is that during the pandemic, to really search the relationships that people have already, to look at those people who didn't renew their gift during 2019 and start the conversation about what they plan to do before the end of the year. So there are about six or seven classical steps to close a major gift. But when it's a donor that you already have a relationship with, then there are only like four or five steps, or maybe even three or four steps to close that gift. Would you like me to get specific?
Yeah, definitely. However, and for those listening that are in the corporate world, we know it's no different, right? That the it's five times more likely to land a project with an existing client than it is to try to get that new one. Although the grass is always greener on the other side, right. We want to get, and right. You do have to have your eye on lead gen to get new people into the fold. That's true. But at the end of the day, you could definitely scale more rapidly by reaching out and cross-selling, upselling to your existing base than it is to get a new client.
Correct. So if you already have a donor and you've done the research and you've made the match between who in your organization is the best person to reach out to that person, you've had some meetings, even if you haven't closed the gift already, but certainly if you've previously closed the gift, then you're already in the cultivation, late cultivation or proposal stage, and then you can really hope to go to closure, relying on the fact that by December, people are motivated to make their gifts. Sometimes foundations, especially private foundations, who have to give a certain amount of money and have been behind the schedule in terms of granting that money before the end of the year for tax reasons, they are ready to give in December as well. So the idea of having those kind of conversations, that should be the first priority in almost any fundraising campaign when it comes to September and October, and certainly this year, where the relationships can be nurtured and brought forward, and those people who are already your friends are ready perhaps to step up even more, then it's time to really move into the closure phase as quickly as possible.
Wow. Would you be able to, after the break, we're going to go to a commercial break, but after the break, even to walk the listeners through the steps towards a gift?
Absolutely.
Amazing. We're on with Rabbi Richard Chaim Bieler, a noted fundraising consultant, former senior fundraiser for YU, Yeshiva University, and OL Children's Home and Family Services. And we're discussing the road to a major gift. This show is invaluable to anyone in the nonprofit space. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Coney Island, do you want better roads for your neighborhood? How long do you wait for the train? Do you currently benefit from government food programs? The 2020 census determines how much funding your neighborhood will receive to help with better roadways, more transit options, and the expansion of government assistance. Fill it out now. It may just be the most important thing you do today. Visit gcicensus.org. That's gcicensus.org to fill out your information for the 2020 census and do your part to help Coney Island address the issues affecting you the most. Find out more and participate today in the 2020 census by visiting gcicensus.org. That's gcicensus.org. 10 minutes to help yourself, to help your community. It's worth the time. Do yours today. gcicensus.org. All submissions must be received no later than September 30th. gcicensus.org.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC. My guest is none other than Rabbi Richard Chaim Bieler, the former senior fundraiser for YU, Yeshiva University, and at OL Children's Home and Family Services. He is a noted fundraising consultant. By the way, before we get back to our prepared questions, Rabbi Bieler, the pandemic and what it did for businesses out there and the way people interact with consultants, how have you fared in the last few months?
So it's interesting. I wasn't sure what was going to happen, especially since I can't hold board meetings in person and work with individuals. But I found that a number of my former clients, some of them I hadn't heard from for a few years, and also some new clients have asked me to just come in and facilitate a very purposeful discussion with either the professionals and or the lay leaders to talk about how things are changing and how they might navigate the next few months or year. I always tell people I may not be so smart, but I am experienced and I'm just sharing with them.
Can I argue with you on the air?
From 40 years of a lot of rejections, but also over the time of working for 40 years in this wonderful field, there have been economic upturns and downturns and times when people are challenged. Nothing like this, of course. This is highlighted and much more extreme than anything that I've experienced. But you can draw out from lessons of smaller challenges and smaller recessions and different times when people were unemployed or things like that. You can draw out from that experience and apply it to these times. So that's what I'm finding that I'm doing. We have like three or four sessions, focus sessions, and then they move on to what they're doing because they could be very well staffed on their own.
Well, Rabbi, I'm officially going to argue with you on the air here. I mean, yes, experience counts, yes, but you're also quite bright. Okay, so for the record.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. I actually have been working with Rabbi Bieler now for over 20 years. I think our first campaign was 2000 or maybe 98, 99.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Before the break, you teased us all with the 7 steps to landing a gift. Or however you want to package that, perhaps you could share that with the listeners here on Mind Your Business.
So again, the road to the major gift, and major gifts are the most challenging. It takes the most persistence. You have to be willing to face early rejection. Often the first ask, you get a no, and then you learn from it. So while the challenges are greater, and it's much easier to be an anonymous fundraiser and to think that the organization is very busy, the real payoff takes place with a major gift, and especially an annual major gift. And let me explain why. If you have a budget and you're struggling from year to year, if you focus on developing a portfolio of annual major gifts, if you negotiate a large gift, a $50,000 gift or whatever is considered a major gift in your organization, then if that's being paid out over 3 years or 4 years, when your fiscal year starts, you're already partially there to the goal. The organizations that really suffer, the not-for-profits that live up to their name, I always say, of a not-for-profit, are the ones who live from year to year, gift to gift, and have not been able to put together an annual giving campaign whereby that they know, let's say that 20 or 25% of their fundraising goal is already spoken for before the year begins. So how does one go for a major gift? First is the research, which is easier now than ever. When I started the career, we used to get clippings and we had a request for clippings and there was research. Now everyone knows that's instantaneous. Probably too much information out there. You have to sort out what is the truth and what is not. And then there is also the discovery. In other words, is there someone in the office who has a relationship with that person? Is there someone on the board who has a relationship with that person? Is there someone who was honored by the organization who has a relationship? Is your bank connected to that person? We were very fortunate at OHEL to have a chairman of our fundraising committee who was one of the most prominent and respected accountants in the city. And he introduced us and he said, I trust you. That was important, that he trusted the organization with some of his most significant clients. And the doors that opened were very significant. And sometimes when we thought it was a long shot to reach someone, he was able to make the connection because of his abilities. So then you have the research, and then you have to figure out who's going to be at the meeting in terms of who's going to set up the meeting, how many people should be there. And as I said earlier, that becomes very difficult during these times because you don't have the face-to-face meeting. Zoom meetings can be all right, but they're nothing like seeing someone, but you have to raise money, so you do what you can do. Right. And once you know who's going to make the meeting, then the question is, what are you going to talk about? The prospect knows that you're there to raise money. You're not there to talk about anything else, ultimately. And how are you going to make that presentation? I have found that the best way is to walk in with tiered projects in your mind that you're talking about a large gift, a middle gift, and maybe even a smaller gift as an opening gift, but each of which you can live with. And then through the conversation, and that's a whole nother discussion about the art of solicitation and how do you have a donor and a prospect talk themselves into the gift, or how do you convince them to buy instead of selling? That's a very important part of fundraising. But the idea is that you discover through the conversation what they're really interested in. And then you have that conversation that starts, you present them with an idea, and then you come back with a proposal, and hopefully you go toward closure and of course the follow-up. So that in a nutshell, in about less than a few minutes, is usually about months and months and sometimes years of work. But the payoff for a not-for-profit to having a healthy major gift campaign is so, so great.
Rabbi, I recall years ago you sharing the story of walking into a donor's office and what you, or perhaps you always do this, and you take a look at what's hanging on the wall, you see what's on the credenza, you take a look, and those are your cues for, and perhaps you could, discuss that.
That's all focused on the fact that a fundraiser, anyone who's involved in raising money, whether they're a lay leader or a professional, has to always keep in mind that they are not taking, but the donor is giving, which means it's their money and they can give to wherever they feel it's appropriate. They've earned it, they've inherited it, it's their money, and you can't tell anyone why they should give their money to something that you feel is important. What you can do and what you have to do is discover what is important to that person and then fit your organization into their priorities, into their dreams. And by the way, that's what's really important now during these pandemic times, because there's a difference between mission and vision dollars. Mission dollars means help us get through where we're going. Vision dollars are the next step, the growth step. And there are those who really want to, especially in difficult times, be the heroes, and they want to kickstart a new campaign, and they want to do more than they would have done before the pandemic. So when you're in the room and you're looking around, or you ask questions and you let the person tell you what's important or not, that's how you discover what's going to do. And then you have to, what's going to work. And then you have to try to make the connection within your organization. Because ultimately, if you have an organization, it doesn't really matter where they're giving the money within your organization. You just would like to close the gift. So let them give the gift where they want to. And then you have a different quality of a relationship with the donor. It's a respectful relationship. You're helping them. You're helping them do what they want. And then, you know, there are people who I'm still in touch with after years and years in the field, and I'm not asking them for money anymore, but we like each other because we got to know each other. And it can be a very, very noble activity, and you can really learn a lot from people.
So revealing. So revealing. Perhaps, Rabbi Bieler, can you take us inside the mind of a donor as they decide whether to accept becoming an honoree for a dinner, or to chair a board, or to chair an event? Can you crawl into the mind and explain it to the listeners here on ABC?
Absolutely. I'm going to do something which my first Chumash teacher taught me, was that he was going to teach us it. Bible teacher, excuse me, he was going to teach us it and not about it, that he was going to teach us what it is and not just talking. So till now, we've been talking about it, about fundraising. Okay. So now let's talk about it. And I'll go back to the case that you referred to, where I walked into an office of a very prominent person in a really big technology company. And we had done our research, and I had two proposals already printed out, because this was a one-time special meeting that was arranged through one of our other donors. And I knew that I had the first meeting to really do more work than I would normally do. So in my briefcase were two proposals, one certain amount on one side of the briefcase and the other one. And I walked in, and there I saw on the wall pictures that related to a totally different area of interest that I didn't expect, and that our research at that time didn't come out. And it turned out, if one thing after another, that the organization, this was Ohel at the time, the organization got a bigger gift for, again, what he was interested in than was in my bag on either side. But afterwards, he said, I want to tell my story. I want people to know what I feel and what's important to me. So if the individual feels that they will have the opportunity to share with others what they're doing, not just to bask in the glory of making a contribution, but if they can share with others why, not what they're doing, but why they want to get involved, why they're charitable. This individual who lived in a brownstone in Manhattan, he had a bowl from his grandfather in Europe. And he said that every night when he goes to sleep, he takes his Rolex watch and puts it in this bowl because he wanted to remember that his grandfather ran for his life from Europe and almost didn't survive. And if his grandfather wouldn't have survived, he wouldn't be here, and he wouldn't be in that technology company, and he wouldn't be living in that brownstone, and he wouldn't be wearing that Rolex. So every day, this person who had the money to do, people would think anything they wanted to ground himself, and he put that watch in that bowl every night before he went to sleep. And every morning when he got up, the first thing that he did was take that watch out of the bowl and think of his grandfather and his heritage. And he was humbled because of that. And he wanted to tell everyone. And there was a rapt audience at the event of about 1,400 people, silence in the room, to see someone who was so important be so real.
Wow, special. My guest is Rabbi Richard Chaim Bieler, a former senior fundraiser for Yeshiva University and Ohel Children's Home and Family Services, a noted fundraising consultant. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
We're all in a rush these days. We're running to meetings, to finish a project. When do we have time to educate ourselves? Enter Business Class, the free daily 60-second video clip featuring advice from C-level executives and business giants such as Beth Comstock, Jeffrey Hazlett, Joe Hart, Shep Hyken, and many more. Follow us on Instagram at Business Class Clips. That's at Business Class Clips on Instagram. Or sign up for our WhatsApp daily broadcast by texting SIGNUP to 718 574-6519 on WhatsApp. Get ready to get ahead.
Hey, Coney Island, do you want better roads for your neighborhood? How long do you wait for the train? Do you currently benefit from government food programs? The 2020 census determines how much funding your neighborhood will receive to help with better roadways, more transit options, and the expansion of government assistance. Fill it out now. It may just be the most important thing you do today. Visit gcicensus.org. That's gcicensus.org to fill out your information for the 2020 census and do your part to help Coney Island address the issues affecting you the most. Find out more and participate today in the 2020 census by visiting gcicensus.org. That's gcicensus.org. 10 minutes to help yourself, to help your community. It's worth the time. Do yours today. gcicensus.org. All submissions must be received no later than September 30th. gcicensus.org.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. Thank you for joining us. And of course, a special shout out to everyone who's tuning in that's involved with an organization. And in case, our listeners know this, but I'm going to add it anyways again. And that is in case you're just tuning in, this show is specifically to benefit the many, many organizations out there in the New York, New Jersey area. And of course, throughout the world. It's important that there's good professional ideas and guidance, and that's why we have none other than Rabbi Richard Chaim Bieler, former senior fundraiser for Yeshiva University, YU, and at Ohel Children's Home and Family Services. He is a noted fundraising consultant. Rabbi Bieler, thank you so much for digging out some very precious time of your hectic schedule to join us here on Mind Your Business. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope that we're helping organizations raise more money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll share, I get testimonials all the time. One in particular was a school, a headmaster, that sent me a very touching email a while back saying that they grew their school from roughly, it was a new school, from 20 to 200 students. And the headmaster said he tunes into the show every single week. And the ideas, even if it didn't directly target or the content wasn't specifically for a school, but he understood how to decipher that information.
Good. Great.
And yes. And what I wanted to mention is that this will be up on the archives, mybradio.com, mybradio.com. So in case you missed the beginning, don't worry, we talked about the road to a gift, a lot of goodies there. And this will turn into a YouTube episode as well. Rabbi Bieler, there is a quote from you as follows. 80% of fundraising is educating your donor base. So perhaps now we could talk about the role of marketing and fundraising. What can a nonprofit learn from soy, almond, and other alternative milks, where they significantly increase their market share over just plain milk?
So I'm lactose intolerant, so this story has personal relevance for me.
Okay.
And I listened to a TED Talk. It's pretty dated right now. It's from 2003. But this idea within the TED Talk, I feel, is timeless. So anyone who remembers almond milk, soy milk in the beginning, knows that it was a boxed milk that appeared in the shelf next to the condensed milk, next to the non-refrigerated milks. And therefore, if you could not have regular dairy cow's milk, you would have to walk to the special aisle. I always had to ask the clerk, where is your non-refrigerated milk? And they'd say aisle 22, because it wasn't a big item then. And it was started by a gentleman in Boulder. Eventually, that company became known as Silk. And he had the idea of taking the same product that didn't need refrigeration ultimately and moving it to the refrigerated case. And I think everyone knows, even if we haven't been in a supermarket by, you know, physically recently, but you know that when you're buying in the supermarket, you have a few cases of regular dairy milk. And now there's soy milk, almond milk, coconut milk, cashew milk, rice milk. There are lots and lots of different milks. And what this person did was he basically showed what's remarkable about his milk. And he got it in front of people's eyes. Their sales tripled. The same product moved to a different section where more people were looking at it. Their sales tripled within a year or two. And that really, I think, is a very important lesson for not-for-profits. Not-for-profits sometimes are really challenged with investing money to raise money. And I understand that because, again, and if you're living from year to year and you're saying, how can I take a donor's money who expects that money to go to a certain place and then invest it in a non-direct service? Well, you can if you turn to your lay leadership and say, you know what? We are limited now in what we can do. We can't have the same events that we used to have. I can't have the same committee meetings that I used to have. We have to get out there somewhere. We have to put ourselves where people will find us. Basically, we have to move ourselves from that aisle 22 and move our organization into the dairy case where everyone is going. And a lot of organizations need help to do that. And it's something that is so important and it's such a good investment. For example, writing in the active voice rather than the passive voice. One of my mentors, Dr. Norman Lamb, who just passed away, unfortunately, a few months ago, mm-hmm. when I spent some time in my early years doing some writing with him, he taught me about the difference between active voice and passive voice. And just a switch in active and passive voice and materials for an organization can turn the dynamic around. It sounds so simple, but it really can help. So marketing and strategic marketing and making sure that people know where you are. And if you haven't been on all the social medias, choosing which media is best for your audience. All these things are areas that I certainly don't have expertise in, but a good marketing firm will know. And by the way, the rate of email opening is way up now because people are home. A few years ago, emails were, don't send emails, it won't work. And people are opening up their regular mail. I'm getting as much, if not more, direct mail this year as I did in the past. And I realized one of the reasons is because people are home and it's more likely that they're going to open their snail mail now, whenever it gets there, but they're going to open their snail mail this year more likely than the year before. So it's sort of counterintuitive that you might say, how can I spend money this year? On the contrary, it's an important place to strategically go into a marketing plan, however limited it has to be, but get the advice of experts and you will set yourself up for greater success.
Now, any ideas perhaps that you could share how an organization can stand out, especially during these challenging times?
So recently I was privileged in working with a synagogue that had a dual celebration. They were celebrating their 50th year and they were celebrating the retirement of their founding rabbi who was there for 50 years. And it was interesting. I knew the synagogue well because our children live in the community. So I did have a special interest in what was going to happen there. And they had to balance between the founders of the synagogue wanting to deservedly honor a wonderful rabbi and his wife, and at the same time, bringing closer the younger generation of the synagogue who did love their rabbi, but they wanted to make sure that the community would be viable going forward. And therefore, we were able on this anniversary to accomplish the blending of the past seamlessly into the future, that honoring the founding rabbi by guaranteeing the future was a great honor to the rabbi. And it was so exciting at the end of the day to see the different generations working together. And by the way, those good feelings continue to this day.
Wow. Question. And this is something that really many organizations could relate to, and you've touched on this in the last few minutes. What's your advice to an organization that says, listen, money is scarce, and for us to take precious, hard-earned fundraising dollars and apply it to marketing, I just don't see the direct correlation. What's your directive to those type of organizations on making the case on if they invest in marketing that they could see a much brighter return?
So going back to the example that we talked about with the synagogue, at one of the meetings we had, I asked a very simple question. I said, what is remarkable about this synagogue? Every synagogue and every not-for-profit does wonderful, important work. But you can talk about what's remarkable about your organization without insulting another one, without saying you're better than another one, because you never want to say that. You never want to do comparisons. But if you find out what the group themselves feels is remarkable, that becomes the linchpin of the campaign. And therefore, the marketing, if that one idea is brought out from the group itself and is turned over to the marketing firm, a good marketing firm will run with that one idea with whatever budget you're able to present to them in the beginning, and it'll likely work because it's true and because the people, the consumers, the people who belong in the synagogue believe it. And therefore, one can start with a targeted marketing campaign based on an idea that you give the marketing firm, and then they will run with it. And I think people will be very pleased with that success.
And again, just to hold on to this for another moment, what's the passionate argument that you would make if they would push back and say, but listen, it's hard-earned dollars that need to go to the services that we're doing day in and day out. What's the case that you would make to say, you do need to invest in marketing? Is marketing, I guess I would add to the question, is marketing a luxury or a necessity for an organization?
So I found in my experience that within your leadership group, within almost any leadership group, there are one or two people who will say no way, and there are one or two people who will say it has to be this way. In other words, there are a few people who will say don't do marketing and don't spend the money, but if you look a little harder, you'll find one or two people who will say, you know what, that's the way to go. And if you have a relationship with those lay leaders, either on your board or whomever they are, and you have a conversation with them and you present a plan, not just we need to spend money, but you show them a plan about how you're going to spend it, then you might convince those people to give above their annual gift, a special gift toward this growth campaign. I wouldn't only call it a marketing campaign. I would call it a growth campaign. I'd call it a campaign to capture the next generation, a campaign to capture a broader constituency. Look at the goal of it. Marketing is not just to spend money on an advertisement. Marketing is to have results. And the results, if you present to your lay leadership, this is what we feel will happen. And then I think you can bring them around to say, wait a minute, we have to do this because, you know, we're getting older and we're not going to be on the board forever. And some of us are losing our jobs and some of us have to cut back a little bit. I'm sure there are people out there who can give more. I want to remind everyone of a statistic, if I might. In 2019, in the United States, all over the United States, $449.64 billion cash was donated to different charities. $449.64 billion. And the trend has been slowly going up. I always say that anyone who says that everyone is tapped out and no one can go further, no, there are people who are still ready to entertain the idea. You just have to go find them and you have to explain the case and you have to let them know what it is. And there are some foundations, for example, that want to help organizations grow and will pay for a marketing plan if they have a plan, if they see a plan. So I would never just accept the fact that they're wasted dollars. I would look for the people who appreciate the investment and let them lead the charge.
After the break, we're going to go to a break, but after the break, we're going to go to what Rabbi Bieler just touched on, and that is the importance to recruit new members, to bring in the next generation transitions. We're speaking with Rabbi Richard Chaim Bieler, former senior fundraiser for Yeshiva University and at Ohel Children's Home and Family Services. We're He's sharing a lot of great, important, invaluable advice and guidance and perspective for anyone in the nonprofit world. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Coney Island, do you want better roads for your neighborhood? How long do you wait for the train? Do you currently benefit from government food programs? The 2020 census determines how much funding your neighborhood will receive to help with better roadways, more transit options, and the expansion of government assistance. Fill it out now. It may just be the most important thing you do today. Visit gcicensus.org. That's gcicensus.org to fill out your information for the 2020 census and do your part to help Coney Island address the issues affecting you the most. Find out more and participate today in the 2020 census by visiting gcicensus.org. That's gcicensus.org. 10 minutes to help yourself, to help your community. It's worth the time. Do yours today. gcicensus.org. All submissions must be received no later than September 30th. gcicensus.org.
If you're installing hardwood or SPC or WPC vinyl flooring, do it with the highest quality products. PC Hardwood Floors, the hardwood flooring leader, has been supplying flooring professionals with the highest quality flooring materials for over 40 years. The knowledgeable team at PC Hardwood Floors will ensure that your materials will arrive at your job site by our own fleet trucks, hassle-free. With 7 locations in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and next-day delivery, PC Hardwood Floors is the tri-state area's preferred full-service hardwood flooring distributor. Call 866-369-3232 to find out how PC Hardwood Floors can help you find the right hardwood products and finishing supplies for all your flooring projects. For a free consultation, call 866-369-3232. That's 866-369-3232. Or visit us at pchardwoodfloors.com. That's pchardwoodfloors.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC. My guest is none other than Rabbi Richard Beeler, the former senior fundraiser for Yeshiva University and at Ohel Children's Home of Family Services. He is a noted fundraising consultant. And being that we just came off of Rosh Hashanah, the new year, it was our intention to kick off this year by giving advice to the many, many, many organizations across America that can benefit from the advice of such a distinguished fundraising consultant. Rabbi Beeler, thank you so much for joining us here on Mind Your Business.
Thank you for inviting me again.
Well, before the break, we talked about transitions, and we had a case of a synagogue that a rabbi founded the community to a big degree and led the synagogue for 50 years. Then they were transitioning to younger leadership. Perhaps you could share some suggestions on how to accomplish that very, very delicate process of transitioning one generation to the next.
That's a very important thing for organizations to stay vibrant. There is something called the life cycle of an organization, where when you start, people want to get involved. It's very, very exciting. And there's an upswing and an upswing. And then organizations naturally, not through anyone's action or anyone doing anything wrong, but they get a little bored. You know, it's the same thing, another dinner, another campaign. And they reach a certain peak. And that's when they have to decide whether to push back and recreate themselves and get them back on the upswing, or they're going to just continue business as usual. And what history shows, whether it's in the not-for-profit world or the profit world, those corporations that don't recreate themselves end up sliding down, are replaced by other organizations or companies in their space, and are part of history instead of the present. So that's where I usually get involved as a consultant, with those organizations that are facing that moment, but they're willing to do that. Let's swing back and get on the upswing. How can we recreate the energy? How can we become new again while we're 50 years old already? And then it becomes a very important thing, because there will be people of the founders who are saying, this is the way we do it here, and we're not going to change. And there will be people in the younger group who'll say, there's no room for us here. And then again, the professional, the leader, has to find within their groups, both of the groups, people who are willing to work together. It may not be everyone, because I always say that fundraising is not social work. And I have tremendous regard for people in mental health professions. My colleagues at OHEL were some of the most excellent in the field anywhere. But the mindset of a social worker or the mindset of a professor is often not the mindset of a fundraiser or a financial officer. And it should be that way. There are different strengths for different people. So the idea is to find those people who are going to say, you know what? I don't want my synagogue to or my organization to become atrophied and stop. I'm going to reach out to some of the younger members and find a role for them. And I think what has to be done and what we accomplished, particularly in the synagogue in New Jersey, and Yitzchak, you were involved in that, yes, is that we found an equally exciting role for both groups. And both groups respected what the other one was doing. The founding group really took care of their rabbi in a very, very special way. And they cared about the future of the building. Right. But the younger group wanted to make sure that the nursery was up to date. And they wanted to make sure that the youth groups were moving along and that the synagogue was renovated to a certain degree, given it had been 50 years in the Northeast through the winters. And everyone found a role for themselves. They came together and they worked together. So you're not going to get everyone to agree. Look for the bridge people on both groups to get together. Never throw anybody off. That shouldn't be part of any not-for-profit. You just let them be part of it. Sometimes people say, you know what? It's time to step aside. You let them step aside, but let it be their choice. And things can go naturally, but it takes a plan. It doesn't happen by itself. One of my mottos is that plans don't always work, but no plan never works.
Talking about plans, I've heard it, you know, a quote that you like saying, don't forget to plan for success. Oh. Perhaps right. We can get to that.
So that's where the infrastructure comes in handy. Okay. You work for so long, you bring the board together, you find the right honoree, and you have an opportunity to have a market growth in your campaign, but you don't take care of the infrastructure to plan for success. You find that dream business honoree, like the gentleman from the tech company, but if you don't have the right materials, the right invitations, the right website, the right ability to attract those gifts, you're going to miss out on the opportunity. So sometimes organizations forget to plan for success. In other words, they have so much of discussion and there's so much feeling this might go wrong and that might go wrong and we're in trouble that they don't take a little bit of time and say, you know what? What if it works? Are we ready to have these individuals come to our event? Are we ready to send an invitation that's appropriate for someone of that stature? Are we ready to have a website that can accept a $25,000 gift when the only largest gift that we got in the past was $5,000. Sometimes it can be as simple as the order of the gifts. I'm going to ask everyone, especially those who are receiving a lot of direct mail and look on websites, I'm always amazed how some organizations still list the gift possibilities in ascending order. And they basically say, would you like to give us 18, 25, 50, 100, 500? Instead of saying 500, 100, and going down. And basically, you're saying to the donor, you can give a gift if you give us $18. We're happy with that. And $100 would be extraordinary. Instead of saying, by the way, it would be nice to get $100, and $18 would be fine also. You can campaigns actually change depending on how an organization presents itself. As an organization that is worthy of a $100 gift in the mail or a $10,000 gift online, or one that basically presents itself, you know what, if you give us $1,000, we're thrilled. So planning for success means that when you do it right, and when you've reached the major gift and you've worked on that person for 2, 3, 4 years and they're ready to come forward, make sure that you're reaching out, investing in the right plan, investing in the right website so that you can receive all of the contributions that are going to be generated by all of your hard work.
As we're approaching the close, it would be remiss if we didn't ask the all-important question. We know that today there is, unfortunately, with the pandemic. Hopefully it passes soon, but we're still plowing through it. And so much of the fundraising journey and the gifts itself are taking place virtually. Perhaps you could share some perspective on the road to a gift, particularly in today's, you know, what we're experiencing right now.
Right. So the easiest dollars to raise are the first dollar and the last dollar. The first dollar being meaning that some people like to be in on the beginning. Those are the people who still wait online, however, maybe not these days, but they usually wait online around the Apple store for the new Apple phone, even though they had last year's new Apple phone, because they want to be the first ones to have that. And then there are people who like in the not-for-profit world to be the ones who finish, who are the ones who complete the project. And therefore, in these difficult times, an organization with a plan and working strategically can create legitimate, it's always got to be legitimate and true, they can create legitimate firsts and lasts. And then they can ask someone, again, your current friends usually, and sometimes someone who's new, but usually your current friends, this, wouldn't you like to be one of the first five people who are going to help us make sure that our teachers are taken care of given this situation? Or wouldn't you want to be one of the last five people to complete the goal that we're able to do such and such for our children? And if an organization works its campaign that way, that is always or often creating firsts and lasts, it's not FOMO, by the way, it's not fear of missing out. People who are wealthy know that there'll always be another opportunity tomorrow. It's giving them the sense of accomplishment and ownership. That is what they want. They want to know that their gifts mean something. And if you look historically, by the way, and I think I'm concluding with this, that during the times of the economic depression in the 20th century, many great synagogues were built. Many great schools were built. People stepped forward. Those people who still were blessed with wealth, they knew that others didn't have it, and they were prepared to do more than they would have done before the economic depression. And therefore, they felt the added responsibility, and they came forward. So while we hope that this pandemic will end as soon as possible and people will get healthy and be healthy and stay healthy, there are still people out there today who, thank God, still have the ability to make a major gift and actually might have a greater interest now in making that gift because they know others cannot. So don't give up. Keep on looking. Try to keep on being positive, and you'll find those heroes who want to make your campaign a success.
You know, that's such great advice and perspective because, you know, many fundraisers have found it more challenging or perhaps just in their mind put that barrier up that like, oh, things are going to be much more difficult now. The guy's going to say no. In fact, I know we're running close to the close, but, you know, what would you say is a great tip for a fundraiser who's like, there's no way he's going to give me a gift, but like kind of plowing through that negative mindset.
A true story is that the only person, and I'm talking about a major gift now.
Okay.
The only person who said yes the first time I asked for a major gift never paid their pledge. It's a true story. The person unfortunately had a, you know, psychological condition that they couldn't say no and they overextended themselves. Mm. So of all the years when I've raised major gifts, I would say that there always was a no, or come back and adjust the proposal, or are you kidding, or I'm not interested in this. That's why the relationship is so important. If you just are the taker, if you're just having that call, making that call when you're asking for money, then you're gonna have a different relationship. But if you're going through your list during certain times of the year and you're calling people, or you have notes of when the anniversary, the birthday, whatever it is, and you're calling them not to ask for money, and you develop a relationship, then you can have a conversation. One of the largest donors at OHEL really challenged the organization. And he told me, he said, I'm doing this. I'm going to give the money eventually, he told me. But I want to make sure your colleagues know how hard it was to make this money and how important it is that they understand how they're going to spend it. So he challenged them with love. He said, I want them to know that rich people don't just give money easily, but they want to give. You just have to be able to make the case properly. So keep on going. As long as you have a good cause, as long as you're being positive, and as long as you realize that today's no if can turn into tomorrow's yes, if you take the right approach and form the relationship, then I think everyone can have greater success.
What a great show. The time flies when we do every time we do a show here on 77 WABC. In case you're just tuning in, you missed a fantastic show, but great news, as the listeners know, this will be up at mybradio.com, mybradio.com. It's also going to be a YouTube episode. Rabbi Richard Chaim Bieler was my guest. He was a former senior fundraiser for Yeshiva University and at Ohel Children's Home and Family Services. He is a noted fundraising consultant. This wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business. By the way, next week, next Sunday night, is going to be Yom Kippur. So Mike McIntyre from the Investors Bank is going to sit in for me. I'm sure it's going to be a great show, and those that are not able to tune in will be able to listen at a later date. It will be up, of course, on the archives at myibradio.com, myibradio.com. This wraps up another great edition. Have a great week.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.